really pleased to see this group here. I am a programmer from way back. Programmers rock. But I think I've got something on a few of the younger folks, maybe not some of the people here. Any speakers of Fortran? All right, now we're talking. That's my experience. And, of course, when C came around, I became extinct when it came to with respect to solar. So I'm here to talk about, is it time to buy solar? And the answer, yes. So if you could just send the honorarium check to this address, I'm pleased to take a few questions and then I'll be on my way. I imagine there's more to it than that and you have a few questions. Actually, the time for solar has been around for quite a while. It's a lucrative opportunity as an investment for homeowners and has been for several years now. And the factors leading that up to this situation is basically the declining cost of solar photovoltaic panels. We're talking about solar electricity. The rebates, the California Solar Initiative, is $3.2 billion that the governor, do you remember him, allocated for California's rebate program. Then there was the 30% federal tax credit, which is huge. 30%, not a tax deduction, an actual tax credit. So you get 30% back from Uncle Sam for the purchase of solar photovoltaics and then the other costs associated with that. And then more recently, we have leasing agreements and what are known as power purchase agreements. So you can actually buy the solar with no money down. You've probably heard those ads on the radio. And we can talk about that a little bit. I'm an engineer, not a financier, but I'm not a big fan of the lease. It seems to me you leave money on the table. That would be a better investment if you were to outright purchase the solar. But I have heard mostly from salespeople that I'm entirely wrong about that. Also, keep your ear to the rail, especially in your specific city or town within the LA area, for what is known as PACE financing. PACE stands for Property Assessed Clean Energy. And the beauty of PACE is the purchase of your solar is paid for or underwritten by the fact that you own the property. You will pay back the government, if you will, for the cost of what it took to put solar on your roof through your property tax. So instead of paying it to the utility, you're going to save it for 6 months and pay it on your property tax. And again, the cost to you is nothing out of pocket that you wouldn't have already spent on the utility cost. But here you're going to be paying it back and you'll have solar on your roof. When you go to sell, it will add that much value to your property. And so that is a big change. It took a long time in coming because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, you know, those wonderful architects of finance for homes, actually became a roadblock to the possibility of doing PACE financing back in 2008, right around the time of the crisis, financial crisis. Finally, that's going away. And the specific other group you should be looking out for is a group called HERO. I'm not sure if it's an acronym, but HERO Financing, it will come to your community and offer fairly low-cost financing for solar. It's tied to a PACE program, so it would be the way PACE might be initiated in your city. And so that's at about a 5% interest rate, much better than you can usually get with other options. So the motivations that most people have for going solar, you're probably aware of them. The number one is the financial savings that you're going to see on your electric bill will pay back the cost of the solar and then some over the life of the investment. And the investment is roughly a 25-year investment. Solar modules will last 25 years. In fact, they're guaranteed by the original equipment manufacturers and by the installers. If there's any failure, they can be replaced. The second thing that drives people for solar is environmental stewardship, doing it for the planet. And that's a big push from my perspective. You don't have to be a planet lover, a tree hugger, to want solar. The first one is more than enough. But, you know, the idea of making a good investment. And then the third is what I would just call social conformity. When enough people do it on a block, then you're going to have this sort of the snowball effect. People are going to go, oh, the Joneses are doing it. Maybe it's time for me to get it on the roof now because that Jones, he's always picking good winners. Related to the motivation for solar, I just want to remind you that the resources that we've been using for the last 100 years or so are finite resources. Peak oil, how many, raise your hand if you're familiar with the peak oil concept? Only a few of you. The idea that oil is a finite resource. If you look at the production of the world's oil, it's this giant mountain, if you will, and we're at the peak of that mountain. There's still half the oil is out there, but getting that half the oil has an increasing cost associated with it. You look at the graph, the blue graph at the bottom is the U.S. oil production. We peaked back in 1970. We even knew we were going to peak in 1970 back in 1955. So we had plenty of time to make the changes and adapt, but we really didn't. We stayed reliant on imported foreign oil. It's, as you know, been a big problem. It drives a lot of our foreign policy, I think, and in a way that I don't necessarily agree with. And realize that that demand for energy is continuing up the slope, at a slope on that left side of the mountain, and continuing up as the oil supply is going to become finite and drop off. And that gap, that ever-increasing gap of supply and demand, means oil and gas prices are going to continue to rise. So one of the big pushes, I think, is, given that oil is our number one commodity for transportation fuel, is going to be a movement away from that. And one of the best choices we have today is an electric car. I'm a proud owner of an EV Spark, a Chevy. I bought a Chevy. You know, I'm used to be a Honda person. And a Chevy Spark is an all-electric vehicle. That's how I got here. And I haven't done it yet, so yeah, I know if someone wants to beat me up for this, but I don't have solar on my roof yet. I'm working on it, and there's a story behind that, too. But that once I have that solar on the roof, I will be powering my car from sunshine. And I think that is a solution we can all look forward to a lot of our problems. Again, if you're not aware of the other problem with oil use is the carbon dioxide, what it's doing to our atmosphere. So in my mind, we can't get off of it soon enough. When I was 14, and we're talking about 1973, I was around for the oil crisis back then. To me, the obvious answer was solar energy. Solar thermal at first, but we were going to move to that. And I knew by the year 2000 I was going to be retired as a big magnet of a huge solar interest. Well, that didn't happen. 35 years later, and I'm only now seeing what is a true renaissance in terms of energy use. This carbon dioxide concentration is a hockey stick effect. It is significantly affecting our climate. Perhaps that's a topic of another talk, but 98% of the scientists all agree with this, and we need to do something about the situation. I like this little graphic between the years 2000 and 2010, roughly. The average size of the ice cap, graphically shown here, watch carefully, as an area about the size of Texas melts away. So our ice cap, we have already significantly changed our planet, primarily in the polar regions, but we're going to start seeing it closer to home if we haven't already. I especially like this graph. This is the Shell oil in 1995 made a forecast going way out to the year 2060. And their prediction was basically an increase in coal primarily, nuclear energy, hydro, biomass. And if you look at the graph, solar doesn't even kick in till the year 2040 or something like that, 2035. And yeah, I heard someone notice. See the one on the top? Surprise. Only an oil company would have the audacity to say, we don't know what it is, but something's going to come and save the day at the end, okay? And it's going to be called surprise. So, of course, my answer is nuclear energy. It's clean-burning hydrogen fuel. It's almost inexhaustible as a source of energy. It should be properly located in a remote location. It provides both heat and electricity to a distributed grid at no cost, and it's accessible by all in everyone's backyard. It has no additional global warming concerns and no greenhouse gases. And if you haven't figured out my ruse, the nuclear energy is the nuclear fusion reactor we call the sun. And it's properly located 93 million miles from us, which is about the right distance for a nuclear reaction, if you ask me. A fusion reaction. This little graphic I like because it gives you an idea of solar's possibilities for the country. If we were to create an area about the size of Rhode Island as photovoltaic cells at about 10% efficiency, we're at 20% today, by the way, we could power the country electrically or indefinitely for the year, if you will. That's all the area that's required. To put that in perspective, you see that little mitten? What is that mitten state called? Michigan, okay? The size of Michigan is what we've already paved with our interstate and highway system. So the area that we're talking about and the investment, it would be a big investment, of course, but it's not unprecedented to put that much area of man-made material to help meet one of our social needs, which is energy. So I think that's a good lesson, too. Expressed another way is this graphic I took from a 1976 book that I studied from when I was studying energy. That one blip, do you see the one marked oil? All of that oil, that peak oil graph that I showed you, if that's that hump in the, sorry, I don't have a pointer, but in the lower left. And if we're looking out decades, if we're looking for a solution to energy that's long-term, we need to look at other alternatives that are going to last. Coal, which has a fairly broad base there, was sort of the, well, of course we're going to move to coal, but with carbon dioxide being a problem, we need to look at the other solutions. And you've got your fission breeder reactors, your fusion deuterium-tritium reactors that aren't even commercialized yet. They haven't even been invented. That maybe is that surprise that Shell was talking about. Or fusion deuterium-deuterium. There's enough energy, enough deuterium in a flask of water to power New York for a week. And so we have the sources there. We just haven't mastered all the technology. But riding ever so faithfully at the very top there is solar energy at 10% efficiency. All the time, I feel like it's a scene from Wizard of Oz. You've had the power all along, just click your heels three times, and you've got that solar that can provide all that energy. And by the way, this is a logarithmic scale, for those of you math majors out there, I know there's a few of you, right? You realize how much bigger that number is than any of the other options shown there. And so we've always had that capability. What has held us back has been cost initially. That's come down. Politics is the big one now. So here's another graphic that shows, put it another way. The two yellow balls on the left are basically our energy use now, and then the larger one is in the year 2050. So that's how much energy we use in a given year. All of those large spheres on the right represent our non-renewable or finite resources, such as natural gas, petroleum, uranium, and coal. So yes, any of those will meet that ball, if you will, on the left, and you can fit quite a few. We can use that for a number of years, but they're all finite. Solar is 23,000 terawatt years per year. It's that large, you know, yellow thing in the back, and it's continuous. It's the only the renewable ones are that many terawatts per year. In other words, they're truly renewable. So if we can meet the needs of our energy use on the left with choices on the, also on the left where it says renewable, I think we're going to get away from a lot of our problems or a lot of our economic issues that relate to energy use. The two different types of solar, and just want to make sure everyone's on board, that what we're seeing today is the push for solar photovoltaic or solar electric energy. Anyone who was around in the late 70s, early 80s may remember the solar thermal renaissance, if you will. I mean, solar thermal has been around. Anyone who's traveled to Europe or Israel, they see it on every rooftop. That's still a valid choice for making heat energy. But the big revolution is now being able to use it for electricity. The costs have come down with the, and there are incentives. We don't need the incentives now, in my mind, but they're there. You might as well take advantage of them. They help make the payback that much faster. So when it comes to solar thermal, it looks very different. It's a much thicker panel with copper, an expensive, unit that goes on your roof. But it's simple plumbing technology. There's no reason why you can't also consider solar thermal when you're going to put solar electric on your roof. In terms of the solar electric technologies, the big three are monocrystalline, polycrystalline, and amorphous silicon, which is a form of thin film. You've probably heard of thin film solar. The first two are the most economic right now, especially if you're in this area, the amount of roof space you have, you want to go with a high efficiency solar cell, either monocrystalline, in other words, solar cells built from single crystals is the way to go, or polycrystalline. Amorphous silicon is still an option. You want to look into it, but the efficiencies are half that or less, and so you need that much more area to produce the same amount of electricity. And so, unfortunately, the idea of super cheap solar also means solar that requires a lot of area, and a large area has added costs of the installation. So what used to be the barrier was the high cost of the solar cells. Now we've gotten to the point where it's flipped. The cost of putting those solar cells on the roof, the labor cost, is the bigger part of the cost. So monocrystalline, you've probably seen these solar panels around. These are actually the less popular ones. If you notice, there's a lot of white space there that you're not getting solar collecting in that the white part. Only the solar cell collects energy. So you need a little bit of extra energy in, or area on the roof. Polycrystalline, you can get those nice uniform looks. Is anyone familiar with this building? 502 Colorado, if you exit 5th Street in Santa Monica and look to your right, you will see this building. You can orient solar on a vertical surface. It's not optimal, and it's certainly not optimal as this building does, has a giant palm tree brushing up against it on the part you can't see. I didn't want to focus too much on that problem. I worked for the City of Santa Monica for 10 years, and as an engineer, I was constantly having to explain, and it wasn't my decision, why that tree was brushing up against the solar cells. Amorphous thin film, also in Santa Monica, is that solar port. It was actually built by the utilities. It's a low efficiency, but still viable solar collection, again, on a commercial scale. No, that was downtown Santa Monica, Civic Center Auditorium area. And then there's all the different types of concentrating solar collectors. That picture in the lower left is basically the technology that's making all the news out in the desert. The giant mirrors that are focusing light on a central heat plant, if you will. It's using the thermal energy of the sun, it's creating steam, running a turbine, which makes the electricity. It's fairly water intensive, and the latest thing I heard is it sadly attracts all the insects to the bright light, which then brings in the birds, and guess what happens to the birds when they hit that focal point? They're called streamers. So it's kind of a sad story. Before you go ranting against the solar world, if you're against the fact that this kills birds, or wind technology kills birds for that matter, then you must be a cat hater first, because there are more birds killed by cats than anything else by three orders of magnitude. I like cats, so I'm going to stick with my wind turbines and such. But back to solar. Panels aren't cheap, but they are cost-effective over their life. And that is the thing we need to get in our heads in terms of the investment in solar. Much like buying a house, it's better to own than to rent. It's better to own your electricity generation than to rent it from our lovely utilities. What causes the end of life of a solar facility? Usually it's a delamination that occurs, that any water that after 25 years gets in between the cell and the protective coating, and the heating and cooling, thermal cycling of that will eventually separate and cause damage and, you know, corrosion and that sort of thing. But it's a sealed unit for the most part, and it'll last 25 years, again, guaranteed by the manufacturers and the installers. They have to both go out of business for you to be out of luck, so to speak. They're incentivized, again, by the federal government and with the rebate programs. The rebates, by the way, have shrunk quite a bit, but what's also happened is the price has been driven down. So even though that you're not at the optimal point of the rebates, you're still at a sweet spot in terms of the cost of solar. And that may start turning around. unlike the Moore's Law, you guys are a computer group, you all know what Moore's Law is, right? Please say yes. This does not have that same capability. So do not be the person who's saying, I'm waiting for the cheap solar. Because I know the computer world, it's just a matter of time before it's, you know, given for free and generating, you know, a panel this size is going to power the city. There's a limit to the amount of energy coming from the sun per square meter. And that limit is about 1,000 watts. We collect that at about 20% efficiency. The best in the world that you could, right, even theoretically, you can't achieve 100%, and that would only be a five-fold increase. So what is Moore's Law? The idea that you're going to, what, double the performance every 1.5 years at half the cost, is it something like that? That's not going to happen. Costs may drop, but they've already, if you watch the price of solar, I don't have a graph, but it's asymptotic. We're just seeing slight drops in the price of solar panels. All the big changes happened in the 90s and early 2000s. You need to understand another concept. A lot of people have this myth in their head that, oh, I'm going to get solar on my roof and then I'm protected against outages. And usually this crosses your mind when you experience an outage, right? The utility lets you down and you're thinking, that's it, I'm getting solar. Be careful. If all you do is get a grid-tied system, that solar system is tied and synchronized with the grid. When the grid goes down, guess what happens to you? You go down. To have a system that is going to ride through an outage, you need to have a battery backup system. The battery backups right now are at a cost that roughly doubles that investment. So what might have been is cost effective becomes not cost effective if you're looking at it from an investment standpoint, if you also insist on the emergency backup capabilities. But that doesn't stop you from doing it. Anyone who is around for Hurricane Sandy, they're jumping all over solar and battery systems because they want to be protected. It's that added cost is a value to them, to know that they're not going to have to suffer that way again. The other alternative, we call it off-grid or remote application or battery backup system, that is, and that may change. What I'm telling you now, the on-grid systems or grid-tied are the popular, the most common way to put solar. But with our friends down the street, Tesla becoming one of the biggest battery manufacturers at an affordable cost, a lot of those economics may change. So invite me back in 4 years and we'll see where we stand in terms of battery backup systems. So the market growth has been a hockey stick. The graph on the left was an earlier slide I had. I realized I had to update it and I grabbed the slide on the right. They look the same except the scale has changed. The tallest bar on the left side is that tiny little red line on the right side. We have been in an exponential growth pattern with the growth of solar for a number of years. On the left starts in 1999, so basically 2000, over 14 years. We're in the gigawatt range of growth now. Gigawatt, billion watts of solar capacity around the world. And how many, in the tens of gigawatts. I don't think I need to explain to this crowd the difference between AC and DC, but just in case, solar is a DC generating source, and our homes work on alternating current, DC being direct current, and alternating current being what's in your wall. So you need a device known as an inverter. The inverter is going to take that DC signal and create the inverted and match it to the grid, but power is going to be generated and shared with the grid, or shared with your home. You become part of the utility. If you were to try to trace the electrons, it would be hard to do because it's a giant sea out there of electricity. But what we measure is the power generation, and we are generating power, sharing it with the utility, and if we need it, taking it on. The other term, let me back up. So inverters, you're going to need an inverter. There's two different types out there now. I'm showing three here, but the two on the left are central inverters, what they call string inverters. You're going to have all of your solar panels come to this central inverter, and that's where the inversion takes place, and the changes from DC to AC. Recently, in the last few years, the microinverter has come out. For every module you have on your roof, you'll need to buy a little microinverter, and that will make AC power directly from that module. So now you don't need this big clunky box next to your meter on the wall. the microinverter does it for you. There's a slight cost disadvantage of going with microinverters at the moment, but there are other advantages. It helps with the shading problems, and it also has individual controls. Some of you programmers may already be aware of this. There's a need. This box is able to, you can talk to it. And so if you can talk to the box, you'll know the condition of that module. You'll know much better what's going on in your roof in terms of maintenance issues. The inverters, the string inverters have generally 10 to 15 year warranties, and you can expect any digital electronic device left outside or in your garage for 10 or 15 years might just, well, you know, go away. So I would plan on having to buy a new inverter if you have a central inverter. With microinverters, they've been matching it, but I think it's mostly a sales technique to get you to buy them. They will honor and replace any failures. I believe many of them are looking at the life of the panel. But that becomes a headache. It's like changing a light bulb. If you have to do that a lot, that's not going to be much fun, especially on a roof where the product is covered, but not necessarily the labor involved. Yes, we're talking about over $100 per microinverter in some cases. The idea of net metering is an important concept. The utility you measure the energy you produce and the energy you consume, and you're going to pay the difference to the utility. In the occasion where you're overproducing, the utility will credit you the equivalent dollars that you would normally have been using. So they credit you at the retail rate, which is a sweet deal. By the way, the utilities didn't think of this. The Public Utilities Commission, watching our interests, came up with this. And utilities are starting to rankle a little bit and find new charges to put on your bill. So just for the privilege of you to, you know, give them power. So I'm not quite sure, you know, that becomes a political animal, and some of you may want to get involved with the fight, because this is definitely coloring the future of how our energy is made. But it is an incentive? Yes, yes. Net metering, yeah, let me make that clear too. We love the fact that the utilities are doing net metering, but I think they're realizing that at 1 or 2% of the market, they can deal with it. But if they have the saturations that you see in, say, Germany, where on a given weekend, 50% of the power is coming from solar power plants, that's when utilities start getting nervous because they're worried about their reliability and that sort of thing. There are rate options you should be aware of. I don't want to get too caught up in the nitty-gritty, but we have what are called time-of-use rates. If you understand your usage patterns and you don't use power in the middle of the day when the utility needs it most for air conditioning large commercial buildings around town, then you might want to go on a time-of-use rate structure, which gives you a break in the evenings when you do use the power and gives you extra credit, if you will, in the afternoons. However, if you do use power in the afternoons, many of you probably have home offices with your computer. Well, all of a sudden, that usage in the middle of the afternoon is going to be charged at those higher rates, and it may upset the economic value of putting the solar on your roof. When they first launched that California Solar Initiative, the default was to have a time of use, and many of the first people saw higher electric bills after they invested $30,000 in solar. Imagine how happy they were. So quickly, the governor stepped in with, actually, an executive order was needed to change that structure around back to the tier structure to make more sense for those customers. He's one of my heroes here. Paul Scott sells electric cars downtown. He's here with his wife on top of his roof where he's put 2 kW of solar. It powers his house, and it also helped recharge his electric car, which had the license plate SUNPWRD, sun-powered. And that was years ago. He had a $50 electric bill. Probably some of you, how many people have a larger electric bill than that? Okay, that $50 went to zero with 2 kW. If you have a much larger bill, I'll actually take some time to work through some of the math to help you figure out what solar is going to cost you. So the future of solar, right? This is not a solar-powered camel. It's a great picture, though. Everyone uses it. Anyone know what that solar is for? That's a refrigerator. It's for the medicine to get it to these remote villages without spoiling. So you can't do that you know, very easily, especially if you're, if it's a camel. I don't think they like having a working generator running on their back when they travel across the desert. This is a map of the United States. Yeah, I guess, it does have Alaska and Hawaii on the bottom there. And this is basically the resource of solar. So if you look, we live very close to the Saudi Arabia of solar in terms of the world. In the upper right, anyone from Seattle here? Anyone came from Seattle? No one at all? Okay, well, we all know that Seattle doesn't get a lot of sun, but that's the amount of sun that Germany gets. And Germany is the country with the largest deployment of solar in the world. What's wrong with the picture, my friends? We've been sitting on this resource, sending, you know, grabbing resources from around the world when we could easily have been using what's in our backyard. So let's make it personal now. There, you guys are all computer-oriented. This website, solarmap.lacounty.gov, no www on this one. This will take you to a place where you type in your address, and it will give you a rough estimate of the availability of solar on your roof, the number of kilowatt hours you can produce, and you would match that against your electric bill, and then you would be able to come up. I mean, it's only a rough guesstimate. And it's not done by hand. Some computer went through, took LIDAR data. Anyone know what LIDAR data? Laser bouncing off your roof to figure out whether you have a pitched roof or not, and the color of the roof. It's this amazing algorithm that figured out fairly accurately how much solar is available to you. So I recommend you. Unfortunately, this is only LA County. The city of Santa Monica, when I worked for them, partnered with LA County to pay for this. There are other models out there. You might be able to find it for other locales, but I can't guarantee it. San Francisco had a similar map generated, and I believe they also have done this. So if it's a fairly progressive, green-leaning community, maybe they've taken their aerial data and adapted it. To me, this would be a great use of some of our taxpayer dollars. The algorithm's already written. We have all the data from JPL. We just need to, well, anyway, we should be able to generate that. So solar's not for everybody, but there's two required criteria. You should be interested in retaining your money and investing it wisely, and you must be planning to use electricity for at least the next 10 years. Failing that, you probably don't want solar. So it's not easy, though. I was telling you my personal story. Getting the salespeople to come in and not have a Glengarry Glen Ross moment is difficult. Does anyone know the reference to that? It's the salesperson from HE Double Hockey Sticks, right? I mean, it's that kind of problem you want to avoid. And that's just, I think, the nature of sales, unfortunately. So now I would like to open up. I think we have time still. We take a break right at 8. So we have I have 3 minutes to 8. Am I? Okay, anyway, and then these are some of the ideas we can talk about. I was trying to, I want to open it up. I feel I can answer most of your energy questions if you have them. But when it comes to computers and how it ties in, there's a lot of things afoot in the technology world that tie computing to energy use, and a lot of it is overlaps in the energy efficiency world, the smart home, the smart grid, and all of these are changes that will probably happen. When you put solar on your roof, you get a smart meter put on your home. So there's going to be some tie-ins here, some opportunities that we should talk about. For any entrepreneurs in the room? None? No? You guys are just dealing with computers? Is that all we're doing? Question? Oh, I'm sorry?
My question is that one of our friends told us about solar that you roll out onto the, it's like a mat. And I didn't see that in the images, and I was curious as to
its the efficiency. Amorphous solar that I was referring to, the third type of technology with half the efficiency, is an example of that flexible or rollable solar. So you can buy a giant roll, and it makes a lot of sense if you have a roof that's known as a standing seam. It's a metal roof with seams every 16 inches, And so they create channels. And you can roll the solar out, affix it, basically just glue it onto that roof. So it's a little easier than some of the racking systems and drilling that has to take place with the crystalline panels. So there is ease of deployment, but it's specific to that roof, and the amount of area you would need is about twice the area for the same amount of power production, and that's tends to be a big discouragement for anyone with a limited roof space. Having lived in Santa Monica, most of those houses are so small, but their energy use is high, that they feel they need the most efficient panel to be able to reduce their energy use to the level they want.
I've spoken to some of the solar salespeople, and I didn't find it that bad.
No.
I have questions about, and it really just comes down to the economics of it. And I'm sure you've had this discussion once or a thousand times, but I'm going to share my experience here.
No, please do.
And just a little background, I'm a realtor, sell houses. One of the things that has come up in the real estate industry is that when you purchase a home that has solar on it, if it's leased, the new buyer has to qualify for the loan, and for some, that might be a deal killer, you know, for those first-time home buyers who are just right on the edge of FICO scores or whatever loan ratios. Bottom line is there are some that won't qualify. You can't do a deal for it. So leasing in many aspects is just not a viable alternative for in that if you plan on selling relatively soon and things like that.
Yeah. It's
I haven't asked my question. On the purchasing end, I understand that there's, you know, you can either buy it and get your rebates or finance it. Whenever I've costed any of this out, and I don't have $25,000 in my other pocket to go and spend that, to go and do that, but, you know, I'm wondering, is there a progression going to make this really cost-effective, much more cost-effective than now, because I priced it out, and those numbers were no more than what I am paying now. I'm just, on the net-net, I'm not really getting any benefit now. I mean, maybe 5 years from now, when the cost of electricity goes up, it might make sense in 5 years. But I just have a problem with it from an economic point of view. I'm wondering if you can share some of...
Sure. I'm a little surprised, though. If you're in the real estate world, you certainly understand amortization. You understand escalation rates and
right. How
that energy cost going up. The average over the historical usage is about historic cost of electricity in this area is roughly a growth rate of 6.7% a year. At least that's the number I use in most of my modeling. And so if you include that escalation rate, you see that very quickly, not only does that payback shrink, you get your money sooner, there's that many more years of free electricity after you've recouped your cost. So I am surprised that you're saying it's a push or, you know, there's really not a lot of benefit.
It may be in a long-term
prospect. Oh, it's definitely a long-term investment.
It's something, but from the short term, like the next 5 years, it looks like my net's not really changing.
Right, but the beauty... is if that solar can be on your roof, what you would normally pay the utility, which would be ad infinitum, is now going onto your property tax and going to the capital on your roof after the 10 years or whatever, and it gets paid off. You will have a power plant that's good for another 15 years. The value will be, at that point, you own it. Or, pardon me, in the lease situation, which I think I made it clear, I'm not a big fan of leases, there is that disadvantage that you would need the new buyer to either assume the loan, or in some strange cases, you may actually want to take the solar with you, which is offered by some companies. But I have heard that complaint and that concern. When you do it with PACE financing, it's no different. In fact, two real estate agents are in my class, and they're excited. They're worried for their future as real estate agents because of the likes of Zillow and websites like that. And so they thought, well, we're going to retool ourselves to also be able to handle the solar question. And their conclusion is that it's a great idea to have it on that PACE financing because it's no different than a Mellow Roos. How many people here pay some sort of Mellow Roos or some other adder in their, you guys don't remember when you bought your house? Anyway.
There's only Mellow Roos and Playa Vista around
here. Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I thought there was, there's often costs that are tied to your community based on some capital improvement. And this is like that. It's attached to your house. But it's only your house that would have it, and the property tax is where it gets paid. The benefits are there, I think, in that case. So you might want to look into some of those.
I'll relook at it again. It looks like an ever-changing industry that is evolving as we look at it.
Right.
One very quick note. Zillow all you want, everybody. Realtors will be around tomorrow when you need to sell a house. You'll use Realtor.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, that's right. We need the mic. While we're waiting for...
When you say that in 10 years, you're talking about basically 72 over R, that 6.5% interest rate increase in value is in roughly a little over 10 years, you've gotten to the point where you break even.
Roofing generally has a lifespan of about, I believe, 20 to 30 years. How does that play into putting panels on top of it and then having to replace the roof?
Excellent question. You're going to find that it's in your best interest to time the purchase of solar with a new roof. And often, in most cases, you need to work with your roofing contractor anyway when you put the solar on. You don't want to void a warranty you might have on that roof. So you need to have that solar contractor speak to your roofing contractor, get their installation procedure approved. Often the roofer will come out and supervise it because you're poking holes in your roof. You are compromising your roof, and the contractors, need to be smart enough to know how to seal them. Usually it's a triple redundant system which keeps the water out. But you definitely want that roofing contractor involved, and the timing of that is best done. When you need a new roof is a good time to look at putting solar on the roof.
And if you bought a roof 10 years ago, you should forget about it?
I wouldn't say forget about it, but you're going to need to look at the cost of the removal and replacement at that point. There may be other factors to consider. If you get your money back in 10 years, that might be a time when you want to think about it anyway, because as I was saying, maybe that solar isn't going to look as great as you want it to look 10 years from now. And you might end up changing it. How many of us buy a new car before the car actually dies on you? So, and I think solar is changing. Right now, a lot of people think of it as an eyesore, but as it's starting to, the cachet of solar is starting to increase, and now there's going to be a day when if a house doesn't have solar, it's like, what's wrong with that, you know?
Hang on.
Okay, we need to wait for the mic, unfortunately. Why don't you?
Among all the people.
The mic is there if you want to speak.
Among all the people who have installed roofs, there surely must be some who regret it.
Who regret the solar, you mean?
Who installed solar panels, wish they hadn't. What are some of the reasons they come up and say, boy, I sure wish I hadn't done that?
I haven't spoken with anyone, but I was looking at houses in this area, and I saw solar, and that exact issue came up that they were trying to sell the house, and the real estate agent there wasn't able to answer my questions very well about the solar because it was a new problem to him. It's the idea of, it's almost like having a lien on your home to have this additional financial burden when selling the house. So that might have been a regret. I think that person was selling the house because it caught up in the 2008 problems, I'm guessing, but I'm not sure. That's all speculation from my point of view.
Do those solar panels on your roof increase your property taxes?
They do not. There is not a reassessment based on the solar, which is another nice benefit.
We have a house in Arizona, and the utility company over there is...
Which company? Arizona Public Service?
APS. Okay. They're putting in smart meters. I noticed that we got a notice in our condo complex that Southern California Gas is starting to install smart meters. How accurate are those smart meters?
Well, if it's a brand new meter, it has to meet the requirements of a certain integrity, a certain, and I'm sure, standard in terms of accuracy. What happened in PG&E, and is this where you're going, that there's a backlash to some of the smart meter rollout because people get higher bills after the smart meter appears. Half of them are getting higher bills because the old meter was out of calibration. The other half are saving money. Are they calling up the utility? I think I owe you more money. Can you please come out and fix the meter? So you have this, I mean, that's human nature. You're going to hear the outcry from the people that have been getting a break for 20 years probably. Disclosure. I used to work for electric utilities, so I've often had to, on the customer service side, so I've stepped into my electric utility shoes, but I will quickly step back out because I'm happy to, you know, I don't cry very much for the for the loss of revenue to the utilities due to solar.
I was a meter reader a long time ago for Southern California.
Oh, okay. So
is that part of the reason that they're doing this, is to eliminate that expense of the meter readers?
Yes. The big push for the automated smart meters is what's called automated meter reading. That's been around for a while, but was never quite enough to sell it. But now with a smart meter, and this is what I was hoping to get to with some of the discussion, especially with computer programmers out there, is that in the energy efficiency world, once you have a smart meter that's able to see what's happening in your home, you can control it and you can opt for time of use rates. There's some interesting ways to play the game with the utility, give them an advantage, they give you an advantage on the rate, so win-win with the utility by virtue of the smarts of the meter and the smarts of all of the controllers around your home. Now, is there a downside to that? Yes, I'm sure you've already heard about the concerns that hackers will come in and know when you're not home based on your appliance use, you know, mess with your world, you know, start your dryer when you don't want it. I mean, I don't think that's a big problem now. I don't think it's going to be, but those are the kinds of fears. And, of course, computer security is an issue. It's a real issue. I shouldn't downplay that. But what can they really do when they get hold of your smart meter? Is it that, you know, is the damage to you that great? That's for you to decide, I think. Whoever has the mic.
Yeah, thank you. I haven't never heard of anything concerning the weight of panels, both the water and the electric. So my question is, what if you already have three layers of roofing on? Can you put these panels on?
Great question. I'm not a roofing specialist, so you may want to have him come up in a moment. But let me answer because we do address this in our class and in the courses I teach. The weight of a typical roof is 15 pounds per square foot loading, dead load they call it. A typical roof one layer will give you 5 pounds per square foot, so you still have a 10 pound per square foot margin. If you happen to have a roof with two layers, you're at the 10 point, and every solar installation is another 5. So if you have two layers and you're going to put solar on it, you're asking for trouble. You're at that limit of your dead load. Again, a good time to clear off all of those layers, 2, 3, 5, however many you have, re-roof with a proper roof, and in the process of roofing is a good time to set those posts, they're called standoffs, and then flash around them, and you can do a much better job if you're not coming in after the fact with a roof. You can still do it, it's not that big a deal, but some people prefer to have a nice clean roof, you know, clean slate, so to speak, place the standoffs, then put the roof covering, then finish with the solar. So I hope that answered your question.
Also not allowed to put the fourth roof on, probably not the third.
This is true.
I live in a condo, and I was at a board meeting, and somebody asked to put solar, and our board just popped up and says no solar. Can they stop us from putting solar in?
I don't believe they can unless the HOA this is a condo, or is it HOA, or both? Or okay. There probably are some rules in there, but you generally you have the right to your roof. The question is your condo roof your roof? That actually, I'm not an attorney. I should probably back away from that. I do know that most solar companies, you know, are reluctant to approach an HOA because it only takes one unhappy customer on that HOA board to make the sale nearly impossible. So I don't see a lot of push. My feeling is by being the first, you're in a sweet spot where you could ask for the best place on the roof, and maybe no one else is going to ask for solar, so you're going to get the best advantage that way. But that is something that you and your condo board have to figure out for yourselves, I think. Oh, Mike, microphone for him. So go ahead.
I kind of glanced through our bylaws and CC&Rs, and I don't think anybody was even thinking solar roof when the last time it was redone. So there's probably nothing that explicitly denies putting a solar panel.
Right.
On.
Usually it's just a discussion you have to have with the board, and you need to tread lightly because they may not be interested. Their concerns will be the roof warranty. I mean, the number one concern with condo boards is often a roof leak situation. So,
I was going to ask a question, you know, as far as the equivalence between natural gas and solar. You know, this country, the latest statistics is we're number one in the world natural gas-wise. We're ahead of Russia and everybody. Yes. And the question is, with $4 or $5 per unit of natural gas, which is a 1 million BTUs, what is the equivalence, you know, for power generation? Because most of our power stations are with natural gas. Most of the coal-fired power stations are converted to natural gas. And with the cheap natural gas, can solar energy compete, you know, with the cost of...
If we're talking about solar electricity, we're talking apples and oranges. Natural gas combustion makes heat. The best you can do to make electricity is of roughly... The overall... And I'm an engineer as well, so the efficiency of natural gas in a combined cycle power plant, the best in the world, is 50, 54%, somewhere in there. So he agrees with that kind of efficiency. So even in that case, it's roughly 2 units of gas to make 1 unit of equivalent electricity. So to compare it on a BTU basis, you'd have to convert your kilowatt hours produced to BTUs, but it's still that 2 to 1. The fact that it competes on the electric bill tells me that it must be economic. Otherwise, it wouldn't work against the utility rates. Would you agree? I'm sorry, who has to go out of business?
Utility companies should go out of business by buying expensive energy, you know, from the solar.
Okay, I want to work through an example. Is solar expensive energy?
That's my question.
That's the question. And my answer is, it will appear to be expensive because all of the cost of the solar is up front. What is the cost of the fuel of solar energy?
Zero.
So you need to look at the amortized cost over the life of the plant, over the 25 to 30 years, and we can debate what's the right lifespan of solar, but over those 25 years, do you get your money back? I need a volunteer from the audience who knows what they pay on their electric bill, and we can walk through this possibly. You, sir. What is?
About 15 cents a kilowatt hour right now.
Well, that's your average rate. I need to know the actual bill amount. Because I'm going to size the solar based on your bill.
Yeah, I would say it's probably about $100 a month.
$100 a month?
Probably, yeah.
Okay. I do this quick calculation. It's quick and dirty. You divide that bill amount per month by 30. So it's 100 becomes, divide by 30. Anyone good at math here? 3.3 kW is the amount of solar you need to put on the roof. A kW of solar nominally is about 10 square feet. So you'll need about 330 square feet of roof space oriented generally to the south. Could be southeast, southwest. Do you have that much roof space? Possibly you don't know. I mean,
He's shrugging his shoulders.
Okay, well, let's assume that Usually you can. 330 square feet is, yeah, that's another, yeah, so you.
10 by 33.
Okay, so, and that 3.3 kW, today's installed cost, again, just broad brush numbers, is about $5 a watt or $5,000 a kilowatt. 3.3 times 5,000. Anyone good at math? 18,000? Does that sound right? $18,000 full cost of the solar. With the rebates, you're going to get maybe $1,000 back on that. The rebate is not a big chunk of the change now, but the tax credit is 30% of that 18, which is $6,000, bringing the out-of-pocket after tax. You're going to have to lay it out, but you'll get it back at the end of tax season, $12,000. Now let's, $12,000, expensive, right? How many people have $12,000 kicking around in their back pocket? Probably, maybe some of you, great, if you do. If not, I understand, I can relate. Okay, so that $12,000, now let's go back to that bill. $100 a month is how much a year? And then we're probably going to zero out his bill with that 3.3 kW. What's that? $1,200. And 20 years?
$24,000.
Which is more, $24,000 or $12,000? Which is the expensive electricity? Even if you throw in a discount rate of 4 to 6%, the cost is still in, all the economics are going to weigh that it is your smart decision. Again, you have to be someone who's going to use electricity for 10 years or more. Because your payback is probably along the lines of 10 years. It might be 7, it might be 14, but I'm just trying to give you the numbers. So now my question is, what do you guys want to do now? Do you want to continue to pay the utility? Do you feel that good when you cut the check to the utility? You love them so much, that person that every once in a while answers the phone when you try to call with a problem? I mean, again, they're taking out of my utility issues. The utility, I mean, don't get me wrong. The utilities are wonderfully reliable in the U.S. We take them for granted to a large extent. And a friend here, they employ a lot of people for power plants and that sort of thing. But there's a huge market and an ability to employ a lot of people by adopting solar. And what's the worst that can happen? Oh, we don't have to go to war. We don't have to use polluting fuels. We don't have to worry about global warming. I mean, all of the other ancillary benefits of renewable power, I think, are there. Is it going to be trouble-free? No. 20 years from now, we're going to have a bunch of silicon panels doped with phosphorus and boron, and they're probably going to be a scourge to our landfills. I don't know that anyone's doing a good job of figuring out how to recycle solar panels 25 years from now. That's a problem for my students to solve. But I want them to think about it now and not wait for it to be a problem. That is one of my biggest concerns, is that we don't think the long term. If you were to be in Asia, the time that they plan is the 100-year cycle. When you build a building, you want it to last 100 or 200 years, but our thinking is 30 years. Oh, I'm sorry. I need to follow the mic.
Do you think that it will ever be required by local governments that you have to have solar power?
Yes. There is already a law on the books by the year 2020. If you're in a home, you're safe, you're kind of grandfathered in. I don't see that changing. But new homes starting in the year 2020 have to be net zero. Wow. In California. It's a huge leap of legislation. It amazes me, but I am also seeing things change so rapidly that we won't be surprised when 2020 rolls around. I don't know if the real estate agents here agree or not, but that's actually good news. The politics in California are kind of ahead of the curve there. Sometimes they're ahead of the technology sometimes. And let me tell a little story. I worked for City of Santa Monica for 10 years as an energy efficiency engineer. And back in 2001, we had won a grant. We looked at all of the rooftops of Santa Monica, and we kind of did the back of the envelope, fairly statistically accurate study. Would those rooftops power the city, you know, if we were to deploy solar on them? And the answer was, with a combination of energy efficiency first, microturbines to deal with some of the 24-hour loads through the night, and solar deployment on the rooftops that made sense in the city, that in fact we could. And the rollout that we saw was probably about a 20-year rollout. and it would have been close to $1 billion, $1.5 billion, not sitting in the city coffers, as rich as Santa Monica probably thinks it is. But it was just a vision. Well, politicians love to grab visions, especially someone else's. And they started saying things like, oh, by the year 2020, the city was going to be energy independent. And I'm like, I never said that. You know, it was compressing the time from 20 years to 14 years. It was claiming that all sources of energy were going to be handled, not just electricity. It was like, okay, we need to regroup. But already the cat was out of the bag. Santa Monica loves to think of itself as green, and they are moving. I got a call today. I hope I'm not getting in trouble by relating this. Solar City contacted me, says they want to work with the students of Santa Monica and the city of Santa Monica, Santa Monica College and the city of Santa Monica to basically make that vision come about. And the Solar City, who has their sister company, Tesla, I was speaking with someone about that, those possibilities. So Tesla batteries, 60% of the battery production is going to be out of Nevada, out of the Tesla factory. So they're going to need customers. And if you tie it in with homes, there's advantages. There's ways for, and you know, Santa Monica's, the dream that he had and that I had 15 years ago is that maybe that city could in fact become energy independent by, say, 2020. In a matter of years.
Another comment, because I have a homeowners association, and there are only four units, and I own two of them, and they would only give me one vote. So they outvoted me and said I couldn't have solar power, and they got a lawyer, and they looked through all the legal laws, and they said that there was no, it wasn't you that you got your vote per unit, it just each person on the homeowners association got one vote, and that's how they outvoted me.
So that's how they shut you out of solar, is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, they voted against me.
Okay, well that might be an answer to your question too then. That's unfortunate. I think they're going to regret it based on the economics that I just laid out for you.
Okay, we have just a few minutes left, so questions?
I was the one that talked to you about Solar City because I know Elon Musk, I think he's president of the board of Solar City and he's hoping to buy it. And his thought is, you know, the batteries that are spent from the Teslas, he was somehow going to use them with the panels for that. So there's a big thing between Elon Musk, Solar
City.
Sure,
it's their sister companies.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they share the boards, you know, it's kind of like a holding company and Tesla, Solar City, what's the third one? SpaceX, thank you.
And
Elon is very visionary and wonderful, you know, doing some amazing things. I don't know if you know the Tesla, the open source of the design. He opened that up. So anyone, right? I mean, as computer programmers, you understand what open source means. That's a huge step, a big change from the way other corporations operate. So I'm very hopeful that vision can, you know, I don't see it right now as a power grab or a market cornering technique. I think he's honestly trying to do the right thing for the world. Oh, I'm sorry. Where's the mic?
I would like to thank Professor Cooley for this wonderful presentation, which made my dream come true. When in 1969, On 19th of June 1969, Neil Armstrong put his foot on the moon. He said, one small step for a man and a giant leap for mankind. At that time, the efficiency of solar cell was 2%. It means about $500 per kilowatt. Okay? Nowadays, due to investment of United States government, $150,000 to $200,000 per year to researcher, to advance this technology to the date that we are right now, that I am a proud owner of solar roofing panel. I'm also the patent holder of single-ply roofing membrane. Now I want to share just 2-3 minutes my knowledge with you. Just is a complimentary to presentation of Professor Cooley. First of all, when you decide to have a solar roofing, remember, you are the winner. for many reasons, not only morally, because you contributing to reduce the pollution and many, many things that I want to talk about, okay? But first of all, nowadays, the utility company, they are very interested because, you know what peak shave means? The hot summer between 11, 12 o'clock, 2 p.m., you have need more electricity to stand to run your air conditioning unit. So it's many areas, they shut down the electricity in order to everybody has electricity. But at that time, the efficiency of solar cell is highest, okay? They call it peak shaving, okay? So, okay, when you decide to have a solar roofing panel, first of all, there are hundreds of roofing installer have mushroom everywhere. It's a new technology, okay? Big chance. The solar the contractor who are doing normal roofing, there are many kinds of flat roof, slope roof, metal roof, thatch roof, shake roof, just name it, yeah. But when you decide to have a roof, the company comes to you and evaluate how many efficiency you need during the last year, and based on that, they make an assessment. They call sizing. How many panels do you need to have? Let me say the amount of electricity plus 10-20% extra. Okay, and then everything goes very smoothly. I want highly recommend it to you. And if you need more information, first of all, you can go to roofsandroofing.com. There is a chapter on that. And also the National Roofing Contractors Association, they have a booklet for homeowner how to install and so on. Thank you.
Thank you. Hetchmet is at most of our meetings, and roofsandroofing.com is his website. And he has an incredible amount of stuff. He's done a 3-volume book and is now redoing it again, an encyclopedia on roofing. Okay, we've got to do our raffle.
Just a quick one. Are the utility companies fighting the use of solar energy because it would hurt them?
I've worked for utilities. I've worked primarily on the push for renewables and push for efficiency with utilities. Having worked for Hawaiian Electric, an investor-owned utility for 5 years, and Anaheim Public Utilities for 3 years, which is a municipal, the two types of utilities that are out there, I see it this way. Utilities are in the business to make and sell electricity. That is what they need to sell, and anything that reduces that is probably a threat to them. That said, they understand that they are a quasi-public entity in many cases. They're either watched over by the Public Utilities Commission or by a Public Utilities Board, those two examples respectively, and they need to make the public happy. It's usually the public happy part, which is why they are promoting solar. But they are, in some regards, the wolf minding the hen house when it comes to, for example, the CI, that $3.2 billion. Who cut you the check? Your utility. They were the ones administering the check so that they maintain control of that whole, you know, orientation. Now that solar has met parity, the cost is at equal or better than other alternatives, what are they doing? They're building huge power plants out in the desert to do what? Sell it to you. When you have your Dorothy, you have the ruby slippers, use your roof, create your own. They can still make their money. There's still going to be lots of people that would prefer to have them be the power generating company and not have the headache on their roof. But my contention is that if you care about money and plan on using electricity for the next 10 years or more, you might want to look at the solar option. I think maybe we want to wrap up on that note. All right, thank you. Yeah.